A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Great to have you on the program today. Coming up, we're going to talk open carry because the Washington Post's Charles Lane says that it is a threat to democracy. Yes, something that is legal in some 44 states, a threat to democracy. The exercise of a constitutionally protected right, a threat to democracy, according to the Washington Post, which, of course, you know, their masthead, where democracy dies in darkness. I think maybe, I guess they should change that to democracy dies when people aren't disarmed. That doesn't quite roll off the tongue. We will also get to later in the program today our armed citizen story of the day, our recidivist report, our good deed of the day. But let's delve into this if we can here. This is the headline from the Washington Post: How Open Carry Laws Can Endanger Democracy. Which is weird because I thought that that was, again, a part of our constitutional right to keep and to bear. Lane is upset by the armed protests that have been taking place around the country, primarily in Michigan and North Carolina. And, you know, I've talked about this on the program before. I don't know that these armed protesters who are ostensibly going out and exercising their Second Amendment rights to reopen the economy, I don't know that it's helpful to the cause. I don't know that it's actually persuading people or helping to reopen the economy in any way, shape, or form. But that doesn't mean I think it should be illegal. You can make a bad tactical decision in terms of a movement without it being a threat to democracy or something that should be against the law. Lane says that, quote, right-wing extremists exploit America's lax gun laws for political gain. Of course, he writes, the open carrying of rifles or handguns is a recipe for intimidation and potentially deadly confusion, even when not politically motivated. If shots ring out on a street full of armed pedestrians, how are the police supposed to identify the culprit? Yet 44 states, he says, allow open carry subject to a hodgepodge of restrictions. Michigan allows open carry in the Capitol, but not casinos. Exhibiting a weapon is okay, but not brandishing it, except in self-defense. Gosh, I know it's difficult to keep track of all of these gun laws, and yet somehow, you know, the nation's 100 million law-abiding gun owners, generally speaking, are able to do so. Now, one of the things that Lane can't point to any actual problems, they're all hypothetical. Oh my gosh, what happens if? What happens if? What happens if? As opposed to what's actually happened. Because here's what's actually happened. In Michigan, for example, last week there was another reopen protest. There were about a dozen individuals out of more than 250 who showed up at the protest who were lawfully carrying firearms. Now, the Michigan State Legislature ended up shutting down that day. They closed the Capitol because they didn't want to arm protesters there. Lane also points to North Carolina, where there have been a couple of protests in Raleigh, the state capitol, where, again, you're talking about probably a dozen or so people who are walking around, open carrying. In some cases, going into a Subway restaurant. In fact, I think my colleague Tom Knighton wrote about this. Gun control advocates now asking Subway to ban the open carry of firearms in their establishments because of this. But there were no arrests made. There were no problems either in North Carolina or in Michigan. This is simply people saying, I don't like this. Therefore, it should be banned. Well, that's antithetical to the idea of individual liberty and individual freedom, which requires us to look at things that we don't like and look at people doing things that we don't like and say, oh, I really don't like that. But it's their right to do so. That is freedom. Every day in this country, I see people say things I disagree with. I see people doing things that I disagree with. Somehow I have resisted the urge to try to ban it all. I don't know what that says about me or what that says about, well, I think I know what it says about Charles Lane, who also says, Quote, open carry may be benign, even necessary, in limited situations. Hunters carrying their weapons home from a day's shooting, for example. On the whole, though, no state worthy of the name can permit exceptions to its monopoly on the legitimate deployment of armed force like those in Michigan or North Carolina. Surely, no sensible interpretation of the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms would say that a state must tolerate them. Why not? Okay, I can do this from memory. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and to bear arms shall not be infringed. Isn't that interesting? And by the way, why do we have open carry laws in 44 states? Because back in the 19th century, legislatures decided they didn't like concealed carry. And some states actually banned the carrying of concealed firearms. The thinking back then was, well, you know, you're going to be carrying. I mean, be honest about it. Let people know about it. That's the proper way to carry. In the 1980s, we started to see the right to carry revolution around the country. And now we've got concealed carry laws, shall issue concealed carry laws in 42 states. We've got constitutional carry laws or permitless carry laws in 15 states. And there are only a handful of states left that require a license, and good cause to obtain a concealed carry license. Some of those eight states are also states that ban the open carrying of firearms. And I would say that those states, like New Jersey, for example, or California, are actually infringing on the right of the people to keep and to bear arms because the average American cannot bear arms, either openly or concealed. And it's interesting to me that Lane, you know, is wringing his hands and clutching his pearls about the dozen or so armed demonstrators in Michigan and North Carolina. Doesn't say anything at all about the 20,000 plus gun owners who were in Richmond, Virginia earlier this year for the Lobby Day rally outside of the state capitol. That was a pretty big crowd. And Lane, I guess, would have encouraged the Virginia State Police to try to arrest all 20,000 of them to declare it illegal. Lane goes on to say, he concludes his piece. He says, no doubt it's ironic that today's conservatives should be adopting the arguments of past radicals. Well, isn't today's conservative yesterday's radical? He says the lesson is that armed political movements of any ideology can endanger democracy and that a consistent, rational reading of the Constitution would empower states to rein them in. You saying so doesn't make it so, Charles. And the facts are pretty clear. I mean, again, the text of the Second Amendment is pretty plain. You've got the right to keep. You've got the right to bear. Now, Lane says, well, the Supreme Court hasn't said anything about the right to bear. It's true that the Supreme Court has not taken a case dealing with the right to carry yet, although there are several of them before the court right now, including challenges to New Jersey's carry law and Maryland's carry law. I am hopeful, fingers crossed, that the Supreme Court is going to soon accept one of those cases. However, it's also important to note that in Heller and McDonald and the Catano decision, the guidance from the Supreme Court that came down back in 2016 regarding a stun gun ban in Massachusetts, nowhere has the court indicated that the right to keep and bear arms is limited to the home. In Heller and McDonald, the court didn't address the issue directly about the right to carry outside of the home, but they said that the core purpose of the Second Amendment was self-defense inside the home. We have seen other court cases not reach the Supreme Court that have addressed this issue, albeit with splits between the various appellate courts. So you've had courts like the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that have said, okay, well, there's no right to carry a concealed firearm under the U.S. Constitution. Okay? Well, if you got the right to keep and you got the right to bear and you don't have the right to bear a concealed firearm, that must mean that you have the right to openly carry a firearm, right? But in California, you can't, because the open carry of even unloaded firearms has been banned by the state legislature. This issue is a live issue, and it is currently before the Ninth Circuit once again. Meanwhile, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, in a case out of Illinois back in 2015, no, maybe a little bit earlier than that, determined that the ban on carrying firearms in Illinois, either openly or concealed, violated the state's constitution. because you've got the right to keep and you've got the right to bear. The judge in this case said, look, you are more at risk of being the victim of a violent crime if you're on the streets of Chicago than you are in your apartment on the 37th floor of a building somewhere. So to say that your Second Amendment rights don't extend outside of the boundaries of your home is absolutely absurd. Rather than take this case up to the Supreme Court, the state of Illinois caved. Gun control activists actually encouraged them to do so. They didn't want the Supreme Court to hear this case. They didn't want the Supreme Court to say, yep, you've got the right to keep and you've got the right to bear. So instead, Illinois adopted a shall issue concealed carry law. Requires a lot of training. It's not a perfect law, but the state acquiesced to the fact that you have the right not only to keep, but the right to bear arms. Now, when it comes to the issue of, again, bearing arms at a political protest, I think this should absolutely be legal. We have our First Amendment rights. We have our Second Amendment rights. But I do think that it might not always be the best tactic to use. At a lobby day rally in opposition to gun control laws, does it make sense to have those who show up express and exercise their Second Amendment rights? Yeah, I think so. If you are, again, trying to reopen the economy, does it make sense to, you know, walk around with your AR-15? Not to me. I'm not seeing the connection between, hey, we need to let small businesses reopen and here's my AR-15. I don't think it's being done, by the way, to intimidate lawmakers. I think it's being done. My theory is that you have a lot of people on the right within the conservative movement who saw the Lobby Day rally in Virginia, saw the 20,000 gun owners, were inspired by that, and who are sort of mimicking this, sort of, you know, hoping to see their protests grow from, let's say, you know, 12 armed protesters to 20,000. I just don't think that it's going to happen when it comes to the issue of reopening the economy. I think that, you know, and I've talked about this at Bearing Arms before, I think a much better strategy for the reopen protesters is to get personal, to talk about how these shutdown orders have impacted their lives, how they have impacted their livelihoods, the damage that is being done in their local communities that they can see. I think that that's a much more effective strategy. But again, I don't think that we should start banning things just because we don't like them or we think that they are an ineffective a way to lobby legislators and the public. And that's the position that Charles Lane takes. So what he wants is not a common sense reading of the Constitution, but a complete rewriting of the Constitution to disallow things that he doesn't approve of. You know, and what's sad is that Charles Lane never really thinks about the consequences of what it is that he's proposing. Because if you get rid of one constitutional right, who's to say we shouldn't get rid of more of them? You don't like the right to open carry as a political statement. Okay. Well, what about your First Amendment right to protest things that Charles Lane might disagree with or might support? Should we curtail the freedom of speech of individuals just because Charles Lane doesn't like what they have to say? Because he wants to curtail the Second Amendment rights of Americans because he doesn't like what they're doing. And that's reason enough for Charles, but it's not reason enough for me. And I don't think it's reason enough for you. And I don't think it's reason enough for the 100 million or so American gun owners. You know, again, you can have an argument about the effectiveness of this, but when you start getting into trying to make it illegal, I don't think that's the way to go. Particularly at a time, frankly, when, and this is so confusing, when the left is even unsure about the police enforcing social distancing measures in the first place. You know, we have seen in a lot of deep blue cities, police departments, mayors come out and say, you know, we're going to hold off on making arrests for low-level drug crimes. For burglary, for shoplifting, for retail theft. We don't want to put people behind bars right now. We want to keep people out of jail to mitigate the spread of the coronavirus in our prisons and in our jail cells. And that's an argument We've also, you know, covered the abuses where violent criminals have been let loose early and they've gone on to repeat more crimes. But that's sort of the thinking at the moment on the left is, well, we don't want to throw a lot of people in jail right now, particularly for low-level offenses, because, gosh, that could be harmful. And then you have Charles Lane. Oh, no, no. Actually, what we need to do is we need to have overwhelming force, and we need to round up all these armed protesters, and we need to lock them up. It should be a crime. It should be illegal. They should go to jail. Again, I'm not getting the consistency here. This really seems to be arguing against the Second Amendment for the sake of doing so, right? There's not a lot of thought behind this other than seeing something I don't like, and the first reaction is, well, that should be illegal. Well, it's not, Charles. Might not be effective, but it is absolutely still legal. Speaking of legal, it is now legal in Massachusetts for you to go to a gun range for the first time since April the 1st. Governor Charlie Baker, with his Reopen Massachusetts plan, says that indoor and outdoor ranges can now reopen for business. Yes, social distancing measures still apply, but ranges, which have been closed since March 31st, allowed to reopen yesterday, as a matter of fact. And we've got more good news. Governor Phil Murphy finally backing down from his ban on gun ranges opening. They will be allowed to reopen in New Jersey on Friday. That comes more than a month after Phil Murphy reluctantly allowed gun stores to reopen after the Trump administration's Department of Homeland Security published guidance declaring that the firearms industry considered a critical part of our nation's infrastructure. That allowed Murphy to say, well, I don't like it, but we're going to let the gun stores reopen. But he kept ranges closed, and now they will be allowed to reopen on Friday. I got to say, I think many of Phil Murphy's decisions when it comes to the Second Amendment are absolutely unfathomable. But I really don't get the idea of a supposed gun safety advocate proclaiming that it's impossible for people to go to the range so that they can get training and education on the firearm that they own. That to me seems to be very anti-gun safety. But however reluctantly the decision was made, gun ranges in the Garden State will be open for business by this weekend. That is good news. Now let's get to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there from California, where a family is complaining that the early release of a violent criminal in California led to the murder of their beloved family member. Bakersfield, California is where this took place. KBAK reports that a month ago in Lamont, California, there was a murder of a pregnant woman. And the suspect in this case, Javier Fidal, who was later killed in a shootout with officers, had been released after serving just half of a 4-year sentence for a illegal gun possession case. According to court records, the sentence was handed down after Fidal entered into a plea deal. He was convicted on charges of brandishing a weapon and felon in possession of a firearm. The state does not consider either one of those to be violent crimes. Assistant DA Joe Kinzel said because this was Vidal's first strike and the charges were only serious that he qualified for halftime. So, in other words, for every day that he spent behind bars, a day was knocked off of his sentence. Patty Flores is the mom of Audrey Flores, who was killed by Vidal. She said, I don't know how he was out. She said he should not have been out. They let him out. According to WBAK, he had a lengthy criminal history. Flores says they're releasing predators. And she's not wrong. She's not wrong. This, by the way, had nothing to do with the coronavirus early releases, of which we have seen many in California. This is how the system functions normally in the state of California, where it doesn't matter your violent criminal history, it doesn't matter the charges. As long as they're not considered violent, even if you're a felon in possession of a handgun, slap on the wrist, and you'll be out before you know it. We've got an update for you on a armed citizen story from last week, Port Arthur, Texas, where a man shot and killed a would-be robber. Now police are reporting that that robbery suspect was in a stolen police car from Opelousas, Louisiana, and apparently was trying to engage in a bit of a crime spree there in Port Arthur. 25-year-old Leon Jones III was driving a stolen unmarked police car that had been taken during an undercover investigation in Opelousas, Louisiana. Port Arthur, Texas police say that Jones was shot and killed after he left a grocery store on Pleasure Island, where he tried to conduct a robbery. And then, just minutes after he left that grocery store, he tried to rob a couple who were crabbing there on the beach. Police say that he demanded money and other property, fired at them both. And that is when the one of the two individuals, the husband, drew his own handgun and fired back, striking and killing Jones. According to Police Chief Tim DeRiso, says the suspect got into a confrontation with that couple. Police say the suspect pointed a rifle, demanded money on their property. Chief DeRiso says the man who was crabbing able to get to his truck, retrieve his handgun, and exchange gunfire with the suspect, who died at the scene. The man and woman not hit by any gunfire. But now we know a little bit more details about that armed citizen story from last week in Port Arthur, Texas. And finally, our good deed of the day from the Riverhead Patch in Riverhead, New York, where a police officer saved two lives in a single day. Police officer Michael Lombardo, that is him on the left there. It was Sunday night, about shortly before 7:30. Officers, including Officer Lombardo, responded to a home on reports of a man who was actively choking and in distress. Officer Lombardo was the first on the scene and found that gentleman on the front porch of the home choking. He performed the Heimlich maneuver on the homeowner, took numerous attempts to dislodge the food. Man started to become limp from lack of oxygen, but eventually he was able to force out a piece of chicken, and the man was able to breathe on his own. He was released from the hospital later on Sunday night. Earlier that day, about 4 hours earlier, 3:15 that afternoon, Lombardo had responded to a report of a man with a crushing hand injury. The man's hand was actually stuck beneath his vehicle. Lombardo, again, first officer on the scene, found the man in distress. His hand was trapped underneath the brake rotor. He had taken off a tire. He was trying to change the tire. Jack tipped over, causing the vehicle to drop. The brake rotor landed directly on the man's hand. My hand hurts just thinking about it. Lombardo used the same jack, lifted the car high enough so the man could free his hand. He was taken to a local hospital, also treated and released with a broken finger. Amazingly enough, just a broken finger and lacerations to his hand. So police officer Michael Lombardo there in Riverhead, New York, a 25-year veteran of the force and in the right place at the right time, not once, but twice on Sunday. We thank you for your very good deeds. That is all the time that we've got for you on this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Hey, coming up tomorrow, though, 1:30 Eastern for our VIP Gold members, going to be doing another live chat with Ed Morrissey from Hot Air and Sam from Twitchy. Looking forward to doing this. You can sign up to become a VIP Gold member at any of the Town Hall Media websites, including BearingArms.com. We thank you so much for your support for our Second Amendment journalism. You also, in addition to the live chats, get exclusive analysis, commentary, and more. So we hope that you will become a member if you are not already one. Don't forget, you can also subscribe to Town Hall Media on YouTube or the Bearing Arms Cam and Company podcast on Apple Podcasts. That way you never miss one of these programs. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow with more of the nation's top Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And until we talk again, be safe, be well, be free, and we'll see you soon with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.